Welcome to the Amped Podcast. On this episode, we bring you another masterclass in collaboration with MTN. Get your caller tunes now. Enjoy.
So intellectual property is a bundle of rights that govern copyrights. They govern trademarks, design, patents, geographical indicators. But for the purpose of this conversation, we're going to focus a lot more on copyright and trademarks. So copyrights are a form of legal protection provided to creators. A copyright gives the copyright owner exclusive rights to reproduce, distribute, perform their work publicly, as well as to create derivative works. So what that means is that if you own a copyright to something, you've got the right to use it how you want to use it. So if anybody else wants to use your work without getting any sort of consent from you, you then can enforce your rights against that usage. So that's what copyright is. Then we've got trademarks. Trademarks govern the protection of your brand or your name. So if I see you're wearing what UTL Creatives Club, for example, UTL Creative Clubs, you would register a trademark for it, which prevents other people from using that same name, UTL Creative Club, so that you've got a monopoly on that name. But it's only a monopoly to the extent that it relates, let's say, from a fashion perspective, that it's only under the clause that governs clothing and fashion. So if somebody else wants to say UTL Creative Club, and maybe the industry that they're in is an engineering company, for example, then you might not necessarily have the monopoly. But what you can argue is that if somebody else wants to use that same name as my name, even if they're in a different industry, that affects your ability to use it, and it also creates confusion. That's why they would, you know, you would want that kind of protection and argue the fact that, and even oppose an application by a UTL Creative Club from using the same name as you. So that's what the trademarks are, and that's what they govern. And then to go back to copyrights, they would govern your composition in terms of whatever it is that you're doing. So if you know that you're a composer, you need to understand what it means to be a composer. You need to understand what your rights are as a composer. You need to understand how you can exploit your rights and how you can exploit your material as a composer. The same applies if you're a film writer. The same applies if you're a podcaster, because podcasts in itself are also is your intellectual property. So if you're creating a podcast and you're in a studio and you're recording a session, and somebody takes everything that you've said and then they create their own podcast on the back of that, then in itself is infringing on the rights that you have as that podcaster who's created that podcast, because that's your copyright. That's something that you have created. The same then applies with a scriptwriter. If you've written a script, you need to know how you protect that script. If I'm going to take my script and I'm going to sell it to different production companies because I've got this wonderful story, then you need to know how that's protected. You need to know how to go about selling that particular script that you've got. And then once you've sold it, you need to know how you must be credited for it. If you're going to participate in the process of the film itself, or you're just selling the script and you're allowing the production company and even ultimately whoever decides, whether it's a DSP like a Netflix, Showmax, or a broadcaster, then you decide how you want them to utilize your script. And if they say they want to make changes, then you have a conversation around how the changes are made, because that is your intellectual property.
The first question is regarding like e-content that is made like live, that is already like on a public platform.
You mean like, let's say you're sitting on an Instagram live and then you create that content on there.
Yeah.
So you're asking in terms of copyright, that can anybody else use your content?
Yeah.
Okay, so with these platforms, it's also very important that you read the terms of use. Like a TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, etc., you have to read those terms, what those terms of use say. The terms of use, generally what they speak to in terms of these platforms, is that those platforms themselves, they can use your content, and that they have a certain ownership to that content in perpetuity, which means forever, royalty-free, and that they don't have to pay you for it, right? But if another person takes your content from those platforms and uses it, that is an infringement of your copyright. So if you've created a beat, Gabza does this all the time where he's on a live and he's creating his music. You can't say just because he's creating it right then and there that you're entitled to take it and use it. you would have to get consent from Kabza to say, I like this song, are you going to release it? If not, can I then buy it from you, the beat from you? Do you get what I mean? So any sort of content, even your videos, if you're creating a video in the form of a reel or in the form of anything else, somebody else can't take that and copy it directly, you know, and use the same music and or take yours and incorporate it into their own thing without requesting your consent for it.
So on social media, right? So what happens if I blow up doing a cover of someone else's song? So for example, Katy Perry, I make a cover of her song, maybe I like change a few chords of her songs, and then I just happen to blow up. So I just want to know what happens in that case, ma'am. Does Katy Perry then get to claim whatever money I've made on social media from that song, or is everything just mine? And then the second question would be classical pieces. So if I hear a Bach piece, maybe a piece from Bach, and then I want to put lyrics onto that and put it on social media, am I allowed to do that? And then Bach is a late composer. So I wanted to know in that case where composers are late, how do we then make sure we get permission to put lyrics onto their stuff? That's the second question. And then the third question is, at which point do we register our music? So for example, if I've got original music, things that have been written and composed by me, I want to put them on social media. So just to make sure that that's protected. So in a case where I write the song, I've got proof that, okay, I wrote the song, I posted the song first, but someone else comes and they take that song. So at which point do I register? Do I have to register that song as mine before I actually upload it? Or is that something that can happen after if it gains traction?
If you're doing a cover version and you're singing someone's song on social media, right? There isn't necessarily an issue with it. The problem then comes once you try and monetize that song. So if you record it and now you're uploading it on Spotify and Apple Music and all of those other platforms, that's where the problem comes, right? Because people are happy for you to sing their song, because what you do is also you build traction for their own song as it is already. So they'll make their money from the song being performed, etc. But you can't re-record it. And if you want to then be a cover song singer, etc., you also would then have to register yourself with the SAMRO from a composer's perspective, because people who sing covers and, you know, we all know you have to get your license, right? Because you're using other people's music, it's not yours. Irrespective of whether you're changing a chord here or there, you still would have to get the requisite consent. And if you want to then record it, you will have to get approval from the master recording owner and the composer, because it's still their right. So just because you blew up doesn't mean that it's yours for to do with it whatever you want, right? That's question one. Question two, so someone like a Bach, right? The life of a copyright is the life of the composer or the creator or the right holder plus 90 years, right? So after the 90-year period, we call it that it's music that's in public domain. So a lot of like church songs and, you know, classical music pieces, they're in public domain, which means you can use them because they're in the public domain. You know, there are instances where, you know, there are the foundations or the owners of the family foundations might bring a dispute and fight the usage, but there is a concept called public domain. A lot of the classical music falls under public domain. A lot of gospel songs fall under public domain. Of course, if Joyous Celebration, they compose the song, Boom Tunzi Namba, and all of them, then it's still, it's theirs. But if it's a, you know, we all know there's the church songs that our parents, our grandparents, and all of them have been singing for years and years. Those would be out of public domain. So that's why even from a royalty earning perspective, you wouldn't earn full 100% of it. You would only earn a certain amount of it, particularly, you know, with, I'll use the gospel songs because, you know, in my previous life when I was at SAMRO, you would only earn a certain percentage for it. You wouldn't earn 100% because it's not 100% your composition. Could never be 100% your composition. I would always recommend that before you put anything out, just make sure that you are fully protected in whichever way. So it speaks even to a trademark. You might not have already started operating under a particular thing, but you know that in 2 months you're going to release products or merchandise using a certain name. I would recommend that before you even release that, drop that merchandise, release it, have your trademark registered. Same applies with your music usage. I would recommend registering like your Risa, Samro, all these other CMOs, register at the point where you know that you're about to release the music. So if you've already composed it and it's sitting on your PC or whatever, you've already got it, just make sure you register with the CMOs already.
If you wanna do a show, if you wanna produce a show for a studio, like what's the legal process that you gotta, like things you gotta look out for?
If you've got a show that you've created, you've got a concept for it, you go and pitch it. So you'll pitch it firstly, you know, either you pitch it to a production company. If you yourself are not a production company, you just have an idea, you'd pitch it to a production company. The production company can then go and market it and sell it to all these different broadcasters or digital service providers, the DSPs and the streaming sites, right? So that's what you do. For the most part, broadcasters don't like to deal with individuals. They would probably then refer you to a production company and say, look, maybe go to this production company, or they'll bring on board the production company and tell that production company that there's this person who's bought a concept. Please, can you work with them to execute? They then broadcast it on their various platforms. When you're pitching it, though, you don't give them your whole concept. You don't go and say, here's my whole presentation. Take it as it is and run with it, because that's where how your ideas get stolen, where you come with a very good idea, the production company is just like, this is brilliant, and they want to run with it without paying you for it. Because remember, there's costs involved in it. You've created something, you must earn from what you've created. And if your pitch deck is, you know, from A to Z, how the story runs, you know, the characters, etc., then you're putting yourself in a compromising position in terms of your rights getting stolen. I mean, there was the whole thing with Somizi and his television show that he had, Dinner at Somizi's or something like that. So there was that whole issue where there was the allegation that he stole the concept from somebody else who had sent him an email highlighting the whole concept from start to finish. So what you need to do is make sure you only give snippets, ideas that still require your input so that you can still earn from it. Once you've done that, then you and the production company or directly with the broadcaster can then enter into an agreement for them to sell it to them. You can transfer ownership, or you can just license it to them, or just give them, you know, you give them rights for a certain period of time. That's the license. Or you're commissioning it. As much as you've created it, then it's a full commission, which means the broadcaster will own all the rights to it, including any of the spin-offs. So that's what you would do. So you'd enter into those agreements with either with the production company, which would speak to how you contract with the production company, how much they're going to pay you, how they're going to credit you, can they do any spin-offs from it, can they use the characters that you've created, can they make changes to the story, the copyright in it, who will then ultimately own it? Does the production company own it, or do you still have an ownership right to it?
So if, let's say, for example, you're sending an email to a figure that you'd like to involve in the show, isn't that email a form of evidence if ever something has to happen? And if not, then how can we prevent ourselves from getting our ideas stolen?
It is a form of evidence that you can use. The problem is that now you have to fight and go to court for you to prove your rights, so, and to enforce your rights and to prove ownership. So that's why it's always key to rather send very brief snippets. Once they agree, you enter into an NDA and say, we're entering into an NDA, this belongs to me, you can't use it outside of me, and that NDA must have a non-circumvent and a non-compete, which means that because I've signed it with you, you can then tell a third party in the terms to circumvent me and remove me from the equation. And then non-compete means that you can then compete with me based on the same basis for a certain period of time, because now we've spoken about this, I've shared this information with you. Now I've shared it with you, the NDA runs for, let's say it's a 5-year NDA, then after that 5-year term, then the person says, I'm actually going to do this and compete with you on what you wanted to do. So you'd enter into that NDA for purposes of having the discussions and the negotiations, and then ultimately you then enter into the final agreement with that particular person. But yes, an email is evidence. It is proof. You can even argue to a certain extent that if the parties via email, if I say, okay, you send me your pitch deck and say, this is my pitch deck, this is a show, and I say, happy, I accept it, and then you start talking about those terms without even reducing it into one document, but it's sitting in an email trail, that can also be considered as an agreement, just as long as the parties have said, we agree and it's done in writing. It can even be a WhatsApp, it can be an SMS. In our country, South Africa, besides, you know, like I said, intellectual property and besides transferring of immovable properties and wills, etc., it has to be in writing, but it can be verbal. So verbal agreements are regarded as agreements in our country and they're binding. The only problem is that now you have to prove. And that's where the lawyers make money and you guys all lose out, because then I'm always going to earn, you know, and you might lose, but then I'm still going to earn. So it's always safer to enter into the agreement and get the cost out of the way at the beginning before there's a dispute, instead of waiting for a dispute and then trying to work backwards.
Something life-changing happens in my life, and then, like I tell her, your friend, you know, ABC happened, 1, 2, 3 happened, right? And then she goes and, like, write, like, a whole movie based on my life. And but then, like, she, like, just like, changes the names and whatnot. Next thing, this movie is big, say, like, on Netflix. How do I then go and then say, oh, no, friend, like, you wrote about me, kid namu? And then, like, how do I claim rights on that? Because, like, she basically wrote about my life without asking me.
She wrote, right?
Yes.
It's very key that she wrote. People write biographies about people. If somebody comes to me and tells me a huge story, I can write about it and just be like, oh, this is interesting. I can write about a case that I've worked on and create a whole series on a legal practice using the examples of my client issues that I've had, and I just changed the names, you know? So all I'm saying is that if you've written it down and said you want to write this and you write it down and pen it, and then she comes and also pens it, then you can raise a dispute from a copyright infringement. But the fact that she has written that story, she's the one that sat down and reduced it to writing, etc., etc., changed the names, you're going to have to argue it and say, no, but it's my story, okay, but it's your life story, but did you write it as such? What I can also do is also buy your rights, right? But for, let's say, if you've written a book, and I say, I want to adapt this book into a television show, I can do that. If I also say, oh, I want to write about, maybe I want to write about you as Lesedi and put it on a production, but there isn't a script that's been written by you, for example, I can come to you and ask you for the rights to that. But for the most part, if somebody writes about you, they've written. You know, there was a whole issue about Siya Kolisi where somebody wrote a book about Siya Kolisi, and then Siya Kolisi had his own autobiography that he had written. And they tried to take them to court, and they won in terms of public opinion, because it's a question of, no, how could you guys do that? That's so immoral. But on the basis of writing a story, you can write a story. People have written stories about Nelson Mandela. People have written stories about a lot of public figures, because you can write them. The difference is that the families might come and say, no, it's a misrepresentation. It's this, that, and the other, but I've written a story. So it happens.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Amped Studios podcast in collaboration with MTN Play. Subscribe to this podcast now. For more information about Amped Studios, go to ampedstudios.co.za. That's ampedstudios.co.za. And don't forget to get your caller tunes now.